Hi, and welcome to Three Worlds Podcast number 27. Now, it's been a long time since number 26, and I bet most of you thought it was never going to come back, but here it is again. Thank you, everybody that's emailed me, and it's been great to hear from you, and I'm really pleased that there's lots of support out there for the podcast, so thank you. No big reasons why it hasn't happened. I've just been busy and doing other projects and bits and pieces and, you know, life, all that kind of stuff. So this is the first of a two-part podcast where I interviewed Jan Morgan Wood, as she was called, and who changed her name recently to Faith Knowlton. Faith has been my partner in crime for around 30 years and is a painter and also a shamanic practitioner, and her paintings over the last few years especially, but really over the last sort of 20-25 years, have been very, very heavily influenced by shamanism, and she's sort of developed her own individual style. And I wanted to talk to her about her work in relation to shamanism. So I recorded a very long interview with her, which I've divided up into two parts. So there'll be two podcasts, which I'm going to put up more or less at the same time, this one and the next one. And it's just an interview with Faith, which I hope you will find interesting. And that's about all I have to say. So let's go straight into the interview with Faith. Well, Faith, you describe yourself as a visionary artist, and really I'd like to know a little bit more about what you mean by that. What do you see a visionary artist as being? Is it kind of a bit like being surrealist, because you're kind of working with different realities and different perceptions of reality? How would you describe it?
Well, a visionary artist records their spiritual journey through life. Labels are difficult because they're restricting. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be restricted by a label. I mean, I suppose in one way I could say I'm a shamanic artist, or I'm artist of imagination, but a visionary artist, there is quite a tradition of visionary art, and those artists are on a soul quest through their life. They're not primarily aiming at art, they're simply living in a very spiritually orientated way and recording what their adventures on the way, basically.
Right, okay, that kind of makes sense. When you say that it's, in a way, it's quite an established movement and there's lots of other artists, can you kind of, you know, do any come to mind at this time? I'm thinking of the kind of the famous ones like Salvador Dali, who isn't perhaps a visionary artist, but it's perhaps one that people will know. I mean, can you think of others that are...
But the most famous visionary artist, probably, and philosopher and poet, was William Blake, and also artists like Stanley Spencer, who see the spiritual relating to everyday life.
Right.
It's, you know, when we see and have an experience of everyday life which goes beyond the ordinary, and the artist tries to capture what that experience was for them, whether it might be seeing an angel or seeing a particular configuration in a sunset. It can be a quite spontaneous event, or it can be like tribal traditions where vision is incorporated into the process of the culture, and you might have healing or personal development, if you like, encouraged and expressed through art, so that it's not a specialist occupation. It's something which people do as an expression of their soul and their connection with life, like cave paintings even, tribal tattoos, or you know, these would may express the visions of the person,
right.
Not necessarily, but they may do.
Right. So it's a very broad thing. I mean, you spoke of Blake, who was the 18th century English artist, and you spoke of Stanley Spencer, who was painting in the early part of the 20th century, and they're very much established sort of Western, in inverted commas, mm-hmm. artists. But you'd also include all of the kind of, you know, the traditions of well, shamanic art, as you said, cave painting and everything else. So how do you see it as being shamanic? Because it's working with the spirits, or...?
I have always worked in an intuitive way, which has not been in line, say, with Western traditions always, although I've trained, I've been to art school and done my figurative life drawing and all the rest of it. But my perception always tended to wander off and see, right. you know, a bird perching on the model's shoulder and that kind of thing. So it wasn't until later on in my life that I started to use shamanism on my own personal journey and work with my helper spirits. And so that's where I'm at now. I work with my own spirit guides and the whole wider perception of the shaman, which sees the world as, you know, ordinary reality as being just one facet of life.
Yeah. Yeah,
there are many other dimensions which we may glimpse, and I think everyone does in a sort of fleeting moment, even like an epiphany moment. People glimpse the larger world that's usually filtered out by our senses, really, to keep us sane, because we can probably only cope with so much.
Yes, yes, indeed.
But the shaman deliberately widens that perception, and so that's been my process over the last couple of decades. And so now my perception is active in that way.
So this definitely wasn't something that you picked up at art school. It kind of almost seems to have happened despite art school. Would you say that was fair?
Oh, absolutely. There is... well, all artists work with inspirational processes, and they feel moved, and they respond often at a soul level to their subject. It might be flowers. I mean, the incredible magic that Van Gogh saw in sunflowers. Mm. So this isn't something that's a very narrow field. All artists have this inspirational process, but certainly through art school there was no help given with the inspirational process. Mine was going off at a tangent, and I would feel quite out of my depth with it at times, having spent, say, a day in the studio at college, and sort of half in the real world and half out of it, and that's not a very comfortable place to be. You get very ungrounded and get to feel really quite ill by the end of the day. And I think that, you know, in a native or a traditional culture, there would be better management of that. It would be seen that the person was not completely in the everyday world, there would be people on hand to make sure they, after they'd done their art or their dreaming or whatever it was, they were brought back into the everyday world, which is where we live.
Yes.
You can't live half in and half out. I mean, it can be very unbalancing in many ways.
Yeah.
To live like, and I think a lot of people who have intuitively worked in this visionary way do get frightened by it.
Mm.
They have very powerful experiences of like very strong daydreaming while they're working, and then when they want to say, well, enough is enough, put the brush or pencil down, it doesn't really stop. They haven't got the knowledge to sort of bring themselves back in line.
Mm.
And I often work with people who have had that experience and without realising it or calling it that, it's put them off. And they really need to learn the energy structures to use around it.
So how have you done that? It's like, okay, you were at art school, you had all these strong experiences which were kind of pushing you outside of the sort of normal way of, you know, thinking of the end of year show at the art school and everything else, and, you know, still lives and all of the stuff that was going on there. So it's like, how have you learnt about the energy management, and how have you kind of trained yourself? Because I know that you haven't kind of like gone off and worked with a particular shaman that's, you've become their apprentice to learn shamanic painting. So it's like you've had to be your own teacher with the help of your spirit. So how have you done that?
Well, initially I learned about healing processes and started to learn about energy and how we are able to leave our bodies at will when we want to, or we can, you know, channel energy through ourselves in a safe and comfortable way. So it was initially what didn't have to do with making pictures.
Okay.
In that sense, it was because I was interested in healing, and then I found shamanism as another step in that direction, and began. I'd actually given up painting for quite a while because I'd got stuck with it for various reasons.
Right.
So there was a big gap in my life where I was just learning about energy.
Right.
And then when I started coming back into discovering tribal traditions through the medicine wheel was the first way, the Native American traditions, and looking at how art and craft, as we would call it, are expressed in those traditions. They're not particularly specialist. Anyone will make their totem object or what they need or know that a certain symbol means a certain thing. There's a whole language of symbols which express the sacred, the unseen worlds that nevertheless we're part of. So that was one way of making links and thinking, well, there's more than one way to express a flower or a person or a tree. It can be very symbolic, it can be very simple, and it can be very powerful. And it's a shape or a colour which stands for something that can't be expressed in the ordinary way. You can't take a photo of it or point it out to someone and say, hey, look at that. It may be your own very personal experience.
Right.
And then from medicine wheel, I went into working with my spirits, with shamanism. And that involves altering perception quite deliberately so that we go into the other worlds and go with a request or an intention for the spirit's help, guidance. And quite naturally, I started to want to draw my experiences. It's a bit like, you know, Lewis Carroll wrote about Alice in Wonderland, and I'm trying to draw, you know, Faith in Wonderland. it's not a solemn process very often. It's quite, I have quite a humorous eye on these things. But often my spirits will be having an experience of travelling through the other worlds on our quest for the answer to a question, and something will happen, some scene will happen. It's rather like Alice in Wonderland or a kind of a dream world, and my spirits will say, oh, you can paint this bit. And it's very often quite an ephemeral thing that's going on, so it's the challenge is to actually try and give that form.
Because the shamanic worlds, in a way, although in a way they're like this one, in another way they're very different. So it's like you have to bring that sort of quality out into it. So in a way, it sounds like it's a little bit like a way for you to record your journeys. You know, like a lot of people will write them down in a journal or notebook or something afterwards. You'll kind of go into your studio and get a canvas and.
Not really quite that immediate, but I do have a list of quite a long list of requests from the spirits that haven't been done yet. So when I want to make a picture, I'll go and look at the list and say, now where have I got to? You know, oh yes, it was when I saw that particular garden in a journey, or gardens feature largely in what they asked me to paint or to portray. And I work a lot with the idea of the soul garden, that we have an inner landscape which is very important to keep in good order and healthy and nourished, and the things which nourish that place is colour and form and the joy of making things. Making things in a sacred manner, if you go that step further, there's a deeper fulfillment in that and a lot of learning. I learn from doing the paintings.
Yeah.
Sometimes I paint something to try and understand it more.
You mean an experience on a journey?
Yeah, from a journey.
So it gives you a greater sort of insight. It's, yeah, okay.
It can do. I can end up just as mystified, but at least I've got a painting.
Okay. All right. So, okay, there's a couple of kind of questions that come to me about that. One of them is that, is then the painting for you, in effect, a little bit like you being a tourist with a digital camera in the spirit world? It's like, are you taking photographs, you know, because that's kind of like how you want to record it? Or is there a deeper meaning to the art? It's like, does the art actually contain an elemental of a sort of, an energy in itself? Is it I guess like a ceremony? Is it like you're creating something? I guess I'm thinking perhaps of the, you know, the idea of the Navajo, the DNA sand paintings and the Tibetan mandalas, which are form of art in the broadest sense, but they're not just the recording. They're not just a kind of tourist snapshot.
But in those cases, they're very conscious evocations of a deity or a helper spirit to invite them into our reality. The same with Christian Russian icons.
Yes.
It's something we've kind of, each culture comes to in its own way, this idea that you can have an image which is like a portal, a window, through which we can share what we see of the other worlds. And that's certainly part of what I'm doing. I'd got that bit quite firmly some while back, that it was a way of me showing people into that other world that I experience, and I found that they were getting benefit from that, and finding they were feeling they wanted to put them in healing rooms and meditation spaces and so on, because they were experiencing a very positive energy from the actual picture.
Right.
More recently, my spirits told me in no uncertain terms that it's the way they can look at our world too, and they can It's literally like a window.
Right.
And they can look out through as well and operate more in this world. That sounds a bit as if, you know, we've got a Hitchcock scenario or something creepy coming in and out. It doesn't really work in an intrusive way. If we want to look into that world, we can. If the spirits want to look into our world, they can. Mm. But there is still an interface there. There's quite a clarity about it.
So by saying that, it's really implying that they're not just like a tourist photograph. They're not a snapshot of an event that happened. They're like a living window or a kind of elemental portal or an energetic portal between the worlds. Do you see it in that way?
Yeah, I mean, if you think of it the way icons have always worked, or tankers.
Tibetan tankers, yeah.
I see it as a kind of my version of that. I mean, those traditions involve long training and a lot of spiritual rigour. And in a way, you know, I've done my spiritual training and continue to do it, but these are personal icons, if you like.
Okay. The other thing that's about icons and about tankers and all of those sort of sacred images is that they have like a body of symbols that they come from. It's like, you know, there is a school of tanker painting, there is a school of icon painting, and you know, the painter in any particular village will be able to recognize the symbols of somebody that they've never met, they've seen their painting. You're not coming from that tradition, so it feels like you must have, over the process, I mean, you've been doing these sort of paintings for about 25 years. So over that period of time, you must have found your own language for it. Would you say that was something that has been part of your development with it?
I think it's a good question. Really, I struggle to be kind of intellectual or to define the process too much, because I'm usually sitting at my easel or with my sketchbook, and I'm just, there's an inner voice saying, oh well, put some leaves over there,
okay.
Or you know, and a lot of the forms that I use are natural forms,
yeah.
And so it would be a tree is like oh well, this tree has to have this shape leaf. Recently, I had a strong picture come to me of a chestnut tree for a particular physical condition that I was working with. And I said, okay, I'll draw a chestnut tree. That's fine. But when I looked it up later, it was actually a herbal treatment for the particular condition.
Right.
So the spirits can be very literal
with
what comes through. But, you know, the way I receive it is to see chestnut leaves. So, that, yes, in a way there is a language, but it's kind of unguided through into it by the spirits, whatever that process is.
So how do you kind of sort of get into the zone, as it were? It's like, you know, do you just sort of like decide that you're going to paint one day and sit down in front of your canvas and or board or paper or whatever? I mean, I know you paint on a variety of media, but what, you know, how do you do it? How do you actually go about it? Do you have processes? Do you have things that your spirits have given you that kind of open the door to it all for you?
Well, the difficulty that I had at college was that I couldn't turn it on, and I can't turn it on now.
Right.
And at college I was, as a student, you're expected to go in, start work, there you are, produce, make your artist statement. And so on. And I would find that I was going into trance and kind of staring at the wall for 2 hours, which didn't please the tutors. I didn't realise what was going on. Now I do. But I still can't push the river with it. If it's not going to be a day when I'm painting, okay. It isn't. I mean, like today, I've been trying several times to go and do clear my time and tidied my space, and there I sit to do the painting, and nada, nothing happens.
All right.
If I work and push at that, I really mess it up.
Okay.
It does not work.
So it's very different to like being an illustrator. I'm ever so aware in our culture now that we've got much more of a sort of body of what you would think of as visionary work. It's like record covers and science fiction posters and artists like Roger Dean, and you know, it's like that alternative world is ever so commonplace. But they do it to order. I presume they do it to order. Mm. It's like they illustrate it. You're really not coming from that place, are you, from what you're saying?
No, I have done illustration. But increasingly that kind of naturally fell away.
Yeah.
And it was because the work moved into this deeper level. But also, I think that I have ways now, if I'm, I don't know, might call it painter's block, you know, or shaman's block, and I'm sort of trying to do a piece of work, and it's simply, nothing is happening. I know that I have other things I can do. I have crystals that I use, and
right.
I can sit with the crystals. I might drum, I might sing, I might go walk down to the river and make an offering, so that I'm not paralysed in it.
Right.
If I really feel it's appropriate, I can go and ask my spirits, well, you know, what's going on? What do I need to do?
Right.
But they're just as likely as to say, go walk down the river,
yeah,
or,
sure.
You
yeah.
know.
Yeah.
This, for whatever reason, isn't the moment. And having said that, when it is the moment, the work can happen incredibly quickly.
Mm.
And often, there's parts of paintings, sometimes whole paintings, I don't remember doing consciously.
Mm.
They just happen.
They just do, yeah.
Mm.
Do you have kind of... One thing I wanted to ask was whether you actually have spirits that are specifically there for you for painting. For instance, I have a spirit that I go and talk to about drum making, and if I have to make a drum for somebody, you know, that spirit helps me with the imagery of the drum and everything else. Do you have like a painter spirit?
Yes, I had a painting teacher spirit come to me some time ago, and I must confess, I didn't go and visit very much. And then one day he came into a journey, and almost with resignation, says, well, I'm going to come into your world. So I have a sense that, you know, that spirit is around. If I need to, it's there in the studio. He is in there with me.
Right. And do you have kind of like rituals that you do in the studio? Do you have altars in there and sort of, you know, prepare yourself in that way when you want to work?
Again, it varies. I would like to be able to say I have a really nice altar and a personal ritual which I do faithfully, but
sounds like you're human like the rest
like
of
that.
Us.
Yeah. I would take today, I wanted to really start work or continue work on a painting which the spirits have said, you've got to finish that today. So I approached it a few times and nothing happened. And then I remembered I have a very beautiful crystal which I keep covered usually. If I don't keep it covered, I'm off with the fairies a lot of the time, because its function is to help me connect with the star energy, which I use a lot in my work in all ways. And but today I uncovered that, and immediately it was like, okay, we're in gear.
All right. Yeah.
Sit down, paint this bit, do that bit, the process moved forward. And I have to remember to cover it up afterwards. This crystal, or part of me is still in that altered state, which is not good for cooking the supper.
Indeed. Do you have to cover paintings? I'm aware in the tradition of tanka painting, and I think also in Eastern Christian icon paintings that they're often covered. Is that? Do you have things like that that you do with your work?
I don't cover them as such, but that has been something I've wondered about.
Right.
Because I do know that people find them rather strong, rather in not exactly difficult, but challenging sometimes because of their energy.
Mm.
And I think this is also a reason for covering tankers and so on. It's like just to quieten the energy
it's
down.
It's pulling them to sleep, really.
I have one residency I did, which was very interesting. I set up pictures, not in a deliberate way. I just as an artist, hung my pictures around this space I was working in.
This was an artist residency in a gallery. Yeah.
And I had a room and display area and a table to work at.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, I in that situation where people are going to come and chat to me, I just did some very low-key work
there.
But I would watch people come in the door, and sometimes it was almost like it got sorted out in the doorway.
Right.
They would go, I mean, okay, I've put my nose into places and thought, well, I don't think this is for me.
No,
and just said,
sure.
You know, thank you, and wandered off again. But it's like people were meeting like this force field and bouncing off and up, not saying anything, just kind of hurrying away. But most of them were being drawn in by it.
Right.
And would comment on how all different ways they expressed it. So one person said it feels like a church.
Ah.
In a positive way.
Yeah. They were just using the language that they had, yeah.
But there were people, they were sensing that sacred that was... And this is how I learn about what I do. I'm not setting out to do this. I'm finding out by the effect it has on people. And I have an open studio every so often, and that's very interesting.
You mean when people can just turn up to
they come and look round, and the work is on display, and I can talk to them about it. And maybe just one picture that draws and they want to know the story of it, and it happens to be relevant to their own spiritual path. So there is there's a soul response going on.
Okay.
And sometimes people will step outside the house and go, oh, as if they've kind of they've suddenly reorientated.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realise it was so so intense in there.
Yeah, it can creep. I mean, not just with your paintings, but I mean, experiences like that can kind of creep up on you, can't you? And it's only when you come out of them that you realise how far you've been in them. I know that one.
Well, like being in the presence of a tanker or an icon.
Well, yeah. Or any sacred site. I mean, you know, anything like that you go to. Mm. Absolutely. You're kind of like in the other world, or at least dibbling your toes in the other world. So that kind of leads me on to asking, it's in a way it's a rather crass question, but what are your paintings for, other than your own exploration of it, of course?
I'm not sure I know the answer to that. I think they are for bringing beauty into the world.
Can you say a bit about beauty? Yeah.
One of the things which happened to me very early on, while I was at college, and it was during the time of the Vietnam police action, whatever they call it now, And everything was supposed to be expressing the angst and the horror of this, and I certainly was very aware of that going on. But a tutor came in and challenged me because I was doing a sculpture of a mother and child.
Right.
And he said, oh, you know, this... how can you be doing this when there's all this terrible things going on in the world? And I just, from somewhere, that I heard my voice saying, my work's about beauty.
Right.
The world needs beauty. That's why, you know, it's because of the horrors that it needs beauty. Yeah. And that puzzled me. It took me a few years to work out what I'd said there. But I find it's very true.
So are you using beauty as, or the word beauty, is that just something pretty?
Yeah.
Or is it more like the Navajo sense of beauty?
It's beauty in the sense of spiritual presence, balance, connection with spirit and with the natural world.
Right.
It's the raw feeling of a sunset, not the prettiness of it, but that kind of... it's something you feel in your heart. It's when your heart moves. And I think that, you know, certainly beauty can be take many, many forms. It can on the surface be a quite ugly thing, but it can be also very beautiful.
So it's
the heart knows, you know. You can't categorise it.
No, but it's not pretty. Okay.
No, I was recently I was given a painting to do of my own bones, my skeleton.
Yeah?
Which was, suddenly spirit turned around and said, look how beautiful your bones are, you know, and it had never occurred to me. So the painting was called Bless My Bones. but you know, sometimes the things that spirit points out as beautiful are, or having beauty, are unexpected.
And not always comfortable.
No.
Well, that was the first part of the interview with Faith, and the second part will be in the next podcast. A little bit more information about Faith. Faith founded Sacred Hoop magazine back in 1993 and worked on it as the editor, and sometimes by herself and sometimes in joint editorship with myself, until she retired from the magazine to concentrate on painting a few years ago, in which point I sort of stepped into the editorship full time. She's the author of a book called Easy to Use Shamanism. Terrible title. She didn't create the title, and we both hate it, but we don't hate the book because the book's really nice. The book is full of paintings, and the name of the book is Easy to Use Shamanism, and it's under her authorship name of Jan Morganwood. And that's sort of available from Amazon and places like that, so you could look out for that. It's a paperback, and it's got lots and lots of her paintings in it. I want to thank people again for emailing me. My email address is nick@sacredhoop.org. Website for this podcast, www.threeworlds.co.uk. That's the number three, not the word three. My own website is nicholaswood.net, and the magazine is sacredhoop.org. So I'm going to finish with a piece of music, which is a song called Somewhere from an English singer-songwriter called Robin Gray, and it's from his album called Only the Missile, which is available on magnatune.com. Magnatune are a kind of record label that I fly the flag for a little bit, and often review in Sacred Hoop, and go to their website. You can listen to their albums, and you basically decide how much you're going to pay for their music. So go and have a listen, see what they have. They have a whole variety of different artists in different genres. Hope you enjoy it, and part two of the interview next time. Thank you. Bye bye. Thank you.
seasons they turn. The light bid me farewell, lingering last on a girl. So make me a list of the things that you need. A lifetime of memories captured in stereo. Somehow, somewhere, somehow, somewhere. Now we reflect on the things that we've been. And I dot the I's and hope you will cross all the T's. Sharing our stories and daring to dream. If fortune favors the fire that burns inside. Somehow, somewhere, somehow, somewhere. I've been too tongue-tied to say how I try to be. No time now. Perhaps this is just a dream. If I cry, these tears will be so hard fought that it could mean that maybe I'll go somewhere. Somehow, somewhere, somehow. If there's no finish line, what's with the speed? The Joker, he took all the firstborns and taught them to ski. Somewhere, somehow.